The following program, the Rewind Sports 60, is sponsored by Jerry Riles and, to the extent applicable, his guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of NewsWeb Radio Company or its management.
It's the freshest radio show in town. Feeling marvelous, I've been with Jerry Rouse. It's the freshest radio show in town. Feeling marvelous, I've been with
Dan Marver.
WCPT. WCPT.
This the coldest sports show. You would get in the hour from 6 p.m. to 7. Chilling with
Robert Scott.
Send the man marvelous. Shout out to Mr. Rouse and the Italian style. You want sports? Is the only politic.
WCPT. WCPT. It's the freshest radio show in town. Feeling marvelous, I've been with
Mike Mercado.
It's the freshest radio show in town. Feeling marvelous, I've been with
Devin Tingle.
Coming at you live from the illustrious studios of WCPT 820 in Chicago, this is the Rewind Sports 60. Real sports, real talk, just playing real. A little bit of technical difficulties here at the beginning of the show, but that's not going to slow us down. This is the fastest hour in sports talk radio, so we're going to our esteemed panel. And now, he's not over at Wrigley Field. He's not down ISU. He's in the studios. He's the marvelous one. He's Dan Marver. What's up, Marver?
Great to be here, Devin.
Glad to join us, too.
Yeah, good start for the second half. Sox won 2 out of 3, and the Cubs are about to win 2 out of 3. Because so that's a good start so for each team. But the Sox are way ahead in their division, some 8.5, and the Cubs are some 8 behind. So looks like things have changed. We're gonna, some of the familiar faces are probably going to go elsewhere between now and July 31st for the Cubbies.
Yeah, we're getting to that soon. And, of course, as you can tell, I am not Jerry Riles, producer Devin filling in for him. So we got another steam panel with different people. So, and again, I don't have anything fun for you, Paul. So just the host of Baseball Weekend Journal, Paul Chavarri. What's up, Paul?
Why didn't I get, like, an intro?
I said I got nothing fun. He's not over in our boss's studio.
You don't have a nickname.
He's not in the middle of nowhere, Illinois.
But not even in, like, the theme song.
Theme
have you ever seen The Sixth Sense, anybody?
No. Yeah. No. Do you hear something, Marvin?
Like, yeah. You have to remember that that was filmed before you were on the panel. I mean, they're still talking about Carlinos on the intro for a while.
That's true. That's very true.
All right, so pretty much we're going to break this down here. All-Star break was this week, so gave both of our teams a nice little break in between here and there. But I'm going to start off with the Cubs. Marver, you're our local Cubs fan here. Why don't you kind of just dive in a little bit on, you know, this team has been very lately, especially this month, kind of hot then cold, on again, off again, good to bad.
And ever since the combined no-hitter on the 24th of June, it's been bad. They lost 11 in a row right after that, going up to the All-Star break pretty much. They did get a couple wins in, but it seems like their weaknesses have been exposed. I mean, not hitting that great, starting pitching, you know, not C-minus, but then the bullpen was their big plus. But if you can't get it to the bullpen, having a good bullpen is irrelevant.
So
right now, I mean, Milwaukee is, they're not going to catch them, it looks like. I mean, they've got Hader whenever they're ahead, so that goes without saying. So, you know, it looks like, unfortunately, for those that have a fondness for 2016, that team will just be a memory, and we'll be back to 2013-ish days, I believe.
Thinking about 2016 and the fact that their manager is a player that was on that roster, do you think that now this puts David Ross on the hot seat, or do you think he's managing next year?
Yeah. Well, I think that he probably will be back next year. I can't see them firing him at this point because I don't know what his contract is or anything like that, but that might be a factor. I think that he's liked by the man, you know, by the upper management, and he's sort of a symbol of the good old days when there won't be good old days anymore. So that could be helpful.
I'm just wondering if, like, the, you know, June was a tough schedule for them, and it looked like it was going to start great with, I think, Memorial Day weekend. They had the Padres at Wrigley, and they didn't. That wasn't the one that they swept, and I think they took two out of three, if I remember. But it looked like it was a good start, and then it ends up ending terribly. And now they're in this position. They went from looking like they were going to be buyers at the deadline to sellers just in 1 month.
And that road trip, I mean, started out well with the win in L.A., then they lost three in L.A., three in Milwaukee. But the thing is that they continued to lose in Cincinnati. And Cincinnati is now the second-place team, so maybe that was Cincinnati coming of age or what have you. Mm-hmm. But then Philadelphia, St. Louis, I mean, they really didn't have a whole lot of better half teams after Milwaukee, so that was a little disappointing. I thought they'd turn it around coming into the All-Star break, but they did not. And I think that the consensus is, I mean, what do you get for a free agent? Some kind of like low-level draft pick, right? So you might as well, if you think you're going to lose them, you might as well try to get something better. That's the way I see it.
No, exactly. They don't have to do a total tear and rebuild by flipping everybody. I think a couple moves, and if they're willing to spend in the offseason, depending on what free agents are available, they might be able to have a decent team next year.
Right. I wouldn't have predicted that Peterson would have been the first one to go, though, but that's what happened.
No, but I mean, when they signed him to a one-year deal, and he was like a poor man's Kyle Schwarber, literally. I mean, in the sense how you can kind of slice him and dice him as left-handed outfielders, but... they didn't, you know, maybe they kind of undersold themselves on Schwarber. He had a way better year than Peterson.
That's right. Well, I mean, again, it was money, but it could be argued that the Darvish deal was not beneficial to them to get Davies. But so, although, I guess, you know, these decisions are made for other reasons besides the actual talent of the players nowadays, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was a very interesting thing, especially at the beginning of the season, getting rid of Yu Darvish. I remember me and Paul talking about how we thought this would be the start of the Cubs rebuild. So I brought in my favorite Cubs fan over here.
Yeah.
And Paul, just for you. He's not in the studio with us. He's not over the studios at WSBC. He's probably sitting on his couch. He is the host of Sports on the Couch, now streaming on the Rewind Sports 60 Roku. He's Mike Mercado. What's up, Mercado?
Oh, my boys, gentlemen, and I use that word lightly. How are you on this Sunday?
What's going on?
Nice to finally join us after the minor technical difficulties we're all having.
I resemble that remark. Paul.
Except for you, of course. I'm speaking mostly about Paws. You know, he's the reason of all these technical issues. We know this already.
Probably.
Don't worry, Paul. We're going to have the last laugh a little bit, because right now I want to talk to Mercado, my favorite Chicago Cubs fan, by the way. And pretty much, Mercado, you do his podcast, talk a lot about the Cubs here, and where do you think this team's going? I saw your I was listening to the Sports on the Couch, and you said with the Peterson trade, like, this is the start of the you know, of the Cubs' selling point. So just, where do you think, who's next, I guess, is probably, who do you think the next guy's Cubs are going to get rid of is what I'm asking next.
It's the million-dollar question at this point. It's the most frustrating question at this point. And I heard you guys talking as I was coming in from in the beginning of the show. And, you know, the first thing about David Ross that I think we need to hit on is him being punished for what the front office and what ownership did. Because let's keep it 100 here on the Rewind. You know how we do this, right? Jerry Riles wants us to keep it honest to the peoples of Chicago. This front office told you what this team was going to do, not in the middle of June, not when they were in a winning streak in May. They told you what they were going to do when in December and in the beginning of this winter season, they get rid of Yu Darvish for a bunch of draft picks and a Zach Davies. And then they try to spin everything that Jake Arrieta, oh, we can find a way to reform his career. We could give him that rejuvenation that he's going to have. And try to sell Cub fans on the cry poor juggernaut, the evil empire in Chicago, while on the South Side, they are building this team and they're trying to do it responsibly. I before we even move forward, I want everybody to understand that this isn't just a team that's struggling and needs money. This is a team that still puts 32,000 people in that stadium at minimum. And they're gonna sit there and try to trade a rookie of the year, MVP, World Series champion, third baseman. Think about it this way. If the Cubs were a contender, and if they were looking for a third baseman or a left fielder, and I don't know, somebody who's just turning 30, who's been in the MVP conversation, has won an MVP, has gone to All-Star games, good citizen, good clubhouse guy, you would go after him, right? Oh, wait, he's on your roster already. So if you can explain to me a deal that's going to not, that's going to recharge this rebuild in a pace that's the equivalent of what Chris Bryant's going to give you in the next 5 years, I haven't seen that trade yet. So I guess being heated, I think it's Chris Bryant is the guy who's first on the chopping block.
I mean, he got traded for Eloy Jimenez, clearly.
And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because it's kind of the conversation I could see White Sox management and fans having right now is how much are you willing to go all in on this season? If you're looking for somebody, and I know it's for later on in the show when you guys go a little deeper on the South side, but it's something like, let's say, Craig Kimbrel, or in the instance for the Cubs when they got Aroldis Chapman, how much are you willing to go in? And then you do something like Jose Quintana, how much are you willing to go in? If you got the opportunity right now to, yeah, you're going to have to make a trade. You've fallen in love with a lot of these guys. You probably held on to Kyle Schwarber a year too long. But if your justification is that he's maybe injury prone, like, who is in this season? You have not been able to give me a good argument, and I'm not talking about you guys. I'm saying the Royal you. Nobody's been able to give us a good argument of why Chris Bryant should not get the money he's probably owed, or at least what's reasonable in his stature where he is among the league. But then there's reports coming out that this team is going to extend or try to extend Anthony Rizzo and Javier Baez. Look, if we were doing fantasy baseball and starting a roster on this Cubs team, Chris Bryant's the number one pick time and time again, 10 out of 10 times. I love Javier Baez. He is fun to watch. Anthony Rizzo has been a pillar for this Cubs team. But there is no argument to tell me why Chris Bryant is not priority number one, two, and three for this rebuild moving forward.
Oh, he definitely is, but the X factor is his agent, Scott Boras. I mean, is he going to be overvalued, and do the Cubs really want to overpay for a 30-year-old player?
You know, and I guess this is easier coming from somebody who really loves the NBA or, you know, just a lot of different sports where you do overpay for your guys. Superstars do get paid crazy money, and we've seen it in baseball, but the tide has kind of turned on that, right? And I think for Chris Bryant, if you're the Cubs, I think a really good example is what people are using about the Albert Pujols thing. If the Cardinals were the team to have given him that extension, it would have made sense because all his success came from and went to the St. Louis Cardinals, not to the Anaheim Angels of LA and California. Like, that is not what happened there. They paid for somebody else's past success and were hoping for some kind of drop of that. For the Cubs, it's still a young man who you can move around the field. Who knows what's going to happen with the universal DH? You got some wiggle room. And if it's hard to get a guy who's a 5-2 player, who's played six positions, who's done all this, yeah, you might have to overpay him. But this is your guy. If you're going to ever overpay for somebody, it's the dude who's been a soldier for your franchise, has been the face of your franchise, has always been the steadiness of said franchise. And it just it kind of shows, and I don't like using the word loyalty in business or sports, because guess what? Sports is business. But a little loyalty goes a long way. And I think Chris Bryant, from the manipulation of the years to all the way that we're up right now, from his interview with Joe Buck on the All-Star break, like, it's just crazy to see a superstar of his magnitude. Like, guys, a superstar as big, an MVP. We've had MVPs in this city. Imagine how they're treating this guy. And it kind of just seems that it's just going to happen and everybody's just going to have to be okay with it.
Now, Mercado, I want to play devil's advocate here, because you've been saying the Cubs are going for this rebuild here. If they're going for a rebuild, why would they spend so much money on a 30-year-old player like Chris Bryant instead of, you know, four or five young prospects, you know, fresh out of college?
Because it doesn't make sense when you're the Chicago Cubs to do that, the LA Dodgers to do that, the Boston Red Sox, the New York Yankees. Look, I understand they do it and they live with the storm that comes with it, but it's not a rebuild in the same instance that you will see the Pirates go through, or what Tampa Bay usually goes through, or what Kansas City goes through. You need to retool. You need to get better at your evaluation. The reason you're in this position right now is because you gambled and you lost. But at no point since then have the players that you've brought up develop, other than, guess what, the guy who won an MVP, and the guys that have somewhat had okay careers, you traded away, and the ones that have potential. You have not developed, and you have not drafted since. Now, they're replenishing right now, but this Cubs team has no excuse. The same reason that the Dodgers don't have an excuse, you are not allowed to pretend that you're a pity poor team when you're the third largest market, and you're selling out that stadium.
Mercado, hey, this is Marver. You know, I think they they should play Bryant the money just because of what they did to him his first year, where they made him send him down so they could keep him an extra year. For that reason alone, they should pay him. And if they don't, I mean, they have these young players, Wisdom, who's also 29, and Bote, who's 28, who could step right in. So they actually, the replacements aren't as young as some people think. But they do have replacements, if God forbid Baez and Bryant go. They have people that can, you know, that can play the position. And not as well offensively, pretty good defensively. So that might be their thinking, that they have people, you know, that can play the position and they won't pay them the money. That's what I think will happen.
And it could totally happen. I think, and Cub fans should know this feeling, though. They felt the same way. I think this was the Tribune company at the time about Greg Maddux. It's like, yeah, you can feel that way. You might have somebody that could be a body in the position that can play third base and might be able to hit a home. But how are you going to replace that guy, that caliber of a guy? You know, imagine it this way. If Chris Bryant, wipe away all our memories, right? Chris Bryant was playing for the Mets or the Phillies, and he was an upcoming free agent. Normally, the Chicago Cubs, if they hadn't won a World Series, if they hadn't put this rebuild, that is target number one. A guy who's done it all. And, of course, at that point, they would overpay for somebody else's legend. But if you're here, and I use that word legend, you know, obviously just in the terms of a guy who was part of the 2016 World Series team, who still has the goods, who, after all the turmoil from the contract disputes, from having to change his batting, and a guy who's made such a wonderful career of it, making adjustments for it, playing all the different positions, having that stressful pandemic season to bounce back. And yeah, it's been a little bit of a slope since, but composes himself. And it's crazy that come at least next season, it seems to me that he'll just be gone. And whether or not any of these trades, you know, pan out, he'll just be gone. And in a time where guys like Marian Hossa are gone, and we just saw what happened with Duncan Keith, eras are ending, and this one just seems a little premature to me.
Now, Mercado, this might be a sore subject if you don't want to answer. You don't have to, but where do you see Chris Bryant going? Like, and what do you think the Cubs are going to get in exchange? What does this team need to get this rebuild you're talking about?
I think Paul and I have talked about this, you know, off mic so many times, and I overvalue Chris Bryant, and I'll be honest about it. Maybe I am overvaluing him, but to me, if somebody like the Phillies or the Mets or Oakland are willing to make a real run at it or trying to get this rental, then you have to ask for everything. I guess the best way to put it is, like, if you get, I would say, a dollar for dollar. I would love to get a $1.50 for said dollar. But if you could get at least 80 cents on the dollar, I think you have to be happy with that, because they put themselves in that position. The Cubs did. The front office did. And to be honest, I think as hard as I've been on the front office, this team did the same thing. When they had that 11-game losing streak, the most ironic thing about this that month of June, the Cubs' destiny was sealed in that 11-game losing streak, correct? What would have happened, though, had they not made that move and traded Yu Darvish? Do you think in two starts with Yu Darvish, that 11-game losing streak would continue? From that move on, this team has been destined for this moment to see who's going to survive heading into the guillotines.
I'm not going to worry too much about Chris Bryant's financial status. He's making $19.5 million this year. So, I mean, whatever happens, he's going to be well taken care of. And it's unfortunate that baseball is a business. We're not back in the pre-Curt Flood days where everybody was tied to one team for life. So things have changed. I mean, I can remember it. You guys probably don't when there was no free agency. So it's a whole different business now. And it's unfortunate, but for the nostalgia and the remembering the good times. But unfortunately, I would expect that there's going to be mass movements here between now and July 31st, personally.
And I think it's okay for there to be – you need to make moves. I mean, it's the same thing we saw with the Blackhawks. They probably were, again, a year too late. Like, you always want to be early. But my issue isn't that they're trying to trade away for a replenish and trying to retool. My issue is the reason they don't want to pay Chris Bryant is because they don't want to pay the money. Now, as much as we don't have to worry about Chris Bryant's pockets, I don't, and neither should you or any of these fans, anybody listening, any sports enthusiasts, should be worried about how much money the Ricketts and the Cubs are spending. They got it. I've spent money on season tickets this year already. I promise you, they're making a pretty penny, regardless, even a pandemic season. This is a team that's renovated a stadium, rebuilt a whole neighborhood, started a brand new network, and they're going to go into next season with Ortega as the face of the Cubs, with Patrick Wisdom, or the guy Chris Bryant who's going to try to help Jacob deGrom win a World Series with the Mets. Like, it's one thing for nostalgia when you're bringing back Derrick Rose for this Bulls team coming up. It's another thing when you're losing a guy who just 6 weeks ago we were talking about in the MVP race. So it's just weird to me. The Chris Bryant thing is weird to me. Not the Javi thing, not the Rizzo thing. That's performance. That's actual injuries that we've seen. The Chris Bryant thing is the one that just smells the funkiest to me when it comes from the beginning of the contract manipulation to, like Paulie said about Scott Boras, to where we're at right now. It's just the weirdest feeling thing I've seen in the Cubs since Sammy's news? Like, this is crazy what's going on. This is an MVP.
Realistically, they could get him back, though, if they flip him and he becomes a rental player somewhere else. And the goal is, I guess, if you're able to flip him, you know, you got to go and get something worthwhile. And I think with the Mets, you might be able to get Matt Allen. I mean, they just drafted Kumar Rocker, who's a little bit older than Allen and a little bit closer to the show. Allen just had Tommy John surgery this year. You know, you might have a decent right-handed pitcher for the future that either is going to be someone, you know, in the top end of your rotation or someone that's going to be trade value in the future for you. But, you know, at the very least, if you're going to part ways with a player of that caliber, I'm with you where you could build around Chris Bryant. But at the same time, you know, you can't just hope he's going to re-sign with the team and keep him around. So if they can get something for him, that would be great. But, you know, really it's, you know, between Baez and Bryant, that's the one that you're going to land the most prospects or the biggest prospects for, because I don't think you're going to get it with Rizzo. I don't think you're going to get it with Chafin. And I think Kimbrel you could, but I just don't know how many teams are going to do that big of a rental for a closer, even though, you know, the Cubs won a World Series based on that premise.
You know, it Paulie, I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't know, Marvelous One, if you kind of feel this way too. Mm-hmm. Even with all things being equal, right, I do think Chris Bryant is willing to talk business. But with that, I don't know if the vibes are the same of, let's say, Aroldis Chapman, right? When the Yankees made that move and they traded Chapman to the Cubs, everybody fully knew that this was a rental and that Chapman was going to head right back to the Bronx. I don't know, and you know, speaking just as a Cub fan and as a baseball fan, I don't know if the vibes are the same. I think KB would listen to the Cubs, but I don't think there's a preference in that sense. Like, he's going to, okay, yeah, I'll go play somewhere else, and then, yeah, you know, let's talk, Jet. I think it's, you guys let me go, and let me see life outside of Chicago. Let me see life outside of this clubhouse in Wrigley. Let me see life outside of the Brizzo moniker, and let me be my own man. Like, he might just take to it, boys. And that just, I think that's something we need to prepare for as well is, okay, let's say best case scenario. You trade him, you get a haul back, right? And then you go to free agency. You might have a chance at the table with him. Or he sees how wonderful another team is and how baseball is international. You don't need to be in the third largest market, especially if you land in New York, to be a big impact. And this is a dude who's going to end up being in the union, probably a union president one day. This is a guy that was forced in that position because of this front office and ownership. I don't know if there's the same vibes for Chris Bryant to want to come back if he actually hits the market one way or the other.
Which leads me to believe that that's their best trade value, their biggest trade piece. Yeah. They got to get rid of him. That's just it.
I know. But and the thing is there's no one else to blame but ownership and front office.
Absolutely.
I know we can always say we could say the player plays his role in it. Absolutely.
Well, with Baez, I don't know if you'd heard about the report. Buster Olney was saying a couple months ago that before 2020, reportedly the Cubs offered Baez a contract somewhere in the range of $180 million. Mm-hmm. There's no way he would be offered that today. There's no way he'd be valued at that today. So he kind of bet on himself and lost. So it's not like the organization has been totally lowballing these guys. I think the entire time the organization kind of knew where they were valuing these guys, but I think they really whiffed on Chris Bryant from start to finish if he leaves the team this year.
Look at the way that the Sox are doing it right now, especially what we just saw with Lance Lynn. They're getting these guys, and like they're not making these crazy max extensions, but they're extending their guys enough.
No, but we should know right away though that they bet on Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert before they even stepped foot in a major league stadium. I mean, that's, you know, but that's something that, you know, the Cubs were nickel and diming Chris Bryant by extending him. You know, well, if we hold him two more weeks, we get that seventh year, and now we're in that seventh year, and they're debating about which team would be best for him to go to.
And that's why, to me, maybe we could be hopeful. And if you're a Cub fan, even if you're a baseball fan, it's good for baseball for Chris Bryant to be playing for the Chicago Cubs. It's good for them to have a star somewhere in this league, whether or not he's the three-time MVP or Mike Trout. Like, it's good for the Cubs, for the North side and the South side, to have good baseball players, like marquee guys. And right now, we're in a weird moment where they've put themselves in a position where imagine if the Cubs were good right now, like really good, like, you know, what would they be doing? Like, what could they be doing? They allowed themselves to get into this position. I really want to know. There's going to be a day where somebody in this front office is going to write a tell-all book. And I want to know what this team, their mindset from the 2020 pandemic season to right now. Where the philosophy change? Where the disconnect happen between Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein to ownership? And where it all just got a cloud? When did it become much more of a Ricketts ownership of a business opposed to Tom Ricketts, where he met his wife, trying to bring a championship to Chicago? You know, it may be hyperbolic, but I do think at this point we've seen the writing on the wall. And this is a team that's transparent. Say what, again, I may be very cynical about it, but to be fair, Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein, as the guys in charge, have been very transparent when it comes to speaking to the media. Jed Hoyer straight up told you, things changed after May. Things changed after that losing streak. But with that, he was the one that made the roster. He was the one that got the orders. So I don't know. Marvelous one. Yeah. I mean, at this point, I don't know how you think the vibes are, but I don't know.
I think the vibe changed dramatically after June 24th. Riding high, first place, no hitter combined, even though, and wow, the Grimble didn't even know they had no hitter. Okay, so then the 11-game losing streak, I think that will always be the point in which the philosophy changed, because now they're, I think it's 9 games out now. So, I mean, they're not going to win the division. So, therefore, it's a different mental approach than if you're leading the division at the All-Star break. So I think that, unfortunately, was a critical determining factor. No matter what management had in their minds before, in their minds now, it, unfortunately, for those that have nostalgia of 2016, it makes sense to make some moves now.
It does make sense, Marv. And Mercado, I don't know if you've seen this in the studios here at WCPT in the office. The Cubs, they were so nice. During that 11-game losing streak, they donated the W flag to us because they weren't flying it anymore.
Well, all right, that's a little dig at me. So one day, just really fast story time with Uncle Mike. So one of the promotions boys, Nikos, you can hear on this very station throughout the weekend, he brought in a nice little White Sox banner, right? I walk out of my office, I see this big White Sox banner, and the mature adult that I am, right away I went on Amazon and ordered a brand new Cubs W flag, and I think since then they've been really bad, so we'll see if maybe you could blame me on that one.
Because you actually did buy the actual W flag, Mercado. They can't fly it anymore.
Yeah, well, Ricketts are looking for so much money, they're penny pinching so much, they asked, I gave them $5, and Tom was like, thank you very much.
You know, Mike, I think to answer your question, when did ownership really shift into cruise control for their bottom line? I think it was the 1-2 punch of winning that World Series early on, you know, slightly earlier than expected, the plan, and then fully pushing back the expiration date on Wrigley Field.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think it's the same thing that happens with the Bears. Like, there's just this weird aura that's going around right now with business and sports. And I understand with what's going on with the Bears and how the NFL has grown so much. What I just, and it's funny how you bring this up about the Ricketts, and you're going at a team right now that, let's say this rebuild, they don't hit. Because look at the roster. Albert Almora, not on the team. You look at Ian Happ. Like, nostalgia true. These guys were part of a championship team. But what if this thing doesn't get better right? You're gambling on making sure that you scout correctly, you draft correctly, and that you bring up guys the right way. What is this ownership going to do if Cub fans that they've helped smarten up decide not to go to Wrigley Field anymore? That they see that a team that's going to win 70 games, 71 games, going to be under 500, fourth in the NL Central. What are they going to do with that entire neighborhood, with that renovated stadium that they put a lot of money into, a brand new network that was a pain in the butt for a lot of people just to get, and for some people that still don't have it? What are they going to do when they can't have that same roster that in 2016 won a World Series, and they knew that was broken in 2018?
How long do you think it would take to deteriorate to that level, though?
I mean, we're looking at it right now. I mean, what's going to change?
People are still showing up. I mean, I don't know how the latest homestands have been.
Fans-wise.
Well, you were kind of saying, what would the neighborhood be like? You know, what if that product isn't? You know, I just think it's always going to be, excuse me, like the Red Sox. You know, even when they were bad, people still go out there because they love the nostalgia. They love Yawkey Way. They love cramming into those tiny seats. And I think you have a better atmosphere at Wrigley that I think, no, I mean, they marketed themselves for so long being the lovable losers that they could do that 2.0 and be like, well, see, you know, you'll be the one telling your grandkids about that Cubs World Series, you know?
It's a good point. There is a tourist attraction to Wrigley Field. You know, let's say you're from Toronto and you get to see Cubs Blue Jays at Wrigley Field. Like, you're right. There is that 20,000 minimum, you know, threshold that they're always going to hit nowadays because of the reputation of Wrigley. But what about, like, the big picture of it, though? Like, what about ratings? What about sponsorship? What about, let's say, partners at CBS or at this point, what, Odyssey here locally in Chicago? What happens when you may be able to get people into the stadium and to buy a beer here or there, but when every other product that's being consumed by your diehard fans isn't, you know, where it used to be? How many people are truly watching Marquee Network?
There you go. Yep. Yeah. Marquee Network needs to definitely factor into that, because I think that they bet against themselves on that one, and it just hasn't panned out yet.
It's like the Dodgers, and this is the difference. I forgot who wrote it. It was a wonderful piece, I believe, on The Athletic. And it's basically the difference of the Dodgers and the Cubs. And this is why it frustrates me so much when it's a financial thing and not necessarily a scouting or talent thing. Because the Dodgers have done both. They've scouted and developed while paying Major League Baseball players. And yeah, they've won a World Series, but they've been in it, and they're continuously in it, even with a killer division. This is a team that we're all still saying, yeah, they could be there at the end of October. You're not the Pittsburgh Pirates. You're not Milwaukee. It's not my money, and I understand it in both directions. It's not my money, but you are the Chicago Cubs. First, their city says it all. Chicago, right there alone, it eliminates you from being a third market team, a lower tier team. Now, if you're the Sox, sometimes you can make an argument about it because we know who the ownership is. But when you have that Cubs after Chicago, there is no room for excuses from any person in Chicago, whether they're wearing black and white pinstripes or blue and white pinstripes. It doesn't matter.
I'm still chuckling. You're talking about the people from Toronto watching the Cubs at Wrigley Field. They can't even watch them play in Toronto.
Oh, no.
It's soon. It's coming.
I know.
Soon.
Yeah. July 30th. I know.
Don't do them like that, Marvelous One. Oh, no.
Hey, we should know, too, about July 30th. That's the true trade deadline this year, since it falls on a Friday instead of a Saturday. So it's coming a little bit closer to Christmas Day for big baseball transactions.
Yeah, no Cole Hamels type of trades, no Justin Verlander type of trades. And that's what makes this even more stressful, not only for the front office, but for, I guess, Cub fans, is that we know that there's the quote-unquote doomsday clock for this team, this core. We say core, and this core's already been kind of torn apart little by little. But we do know the expiration date, because it's at the end of this month. And if it does, nothing happens, if at, what, 3 p.m. that day nothing happens, then what happens the rest of the month? The rest of the month, no matter how bad this Cubs team may be, no matter how good they may end up being, no matter if they go on a nice run and they miss the playoffs and they make things interesting, all the best case scenarios, all the worst case scenarios, the only conversation will be if they don't trade Chris Bryant or Javier Baez or Anthony Rizzo or Craig Kimbrell, will be, who's coming back? What are they going to do? How much are they going to offer? It will be the only story for this Cubs team. So this is only one half of what's going to be a crazy 2021 Cubs season that we're all going to be talking about the turning point of this franchise that was a perennial winner.
Well, I think if you end up having most or all of these guys after the trade deadline, you're either going to have a really soupy malaise around, because everyone's just wondering who's gunning for the high road and the market and who's really negotiating with the team and see if the front office gets panicky and then really does try to overpay for Chris Bryant or somebody just to keep them around and build and attract the fan base with like, well, hey, we did something, we didn't just leave him high and dry.
And I think for most Cub fans, it's going to be an interesting mentality shifting for Cub fans when you think about how they've learned so many terms from 2011 all the way till now, how smart baseball fans in the city have become. Whether you were a diehard Cub fan and listened to every word of Theo Epstein, or you were a Sox fan just kind of looking in and listening, overhearing what was going on, baseball got a lot smarter when Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer came into office and started rebuilding this Cubs team. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens if they do give contracts to some of these guys, if they do extensions, if they do trade away, who they trade for, where are these guys ranked in the Prospect 100? Like, a lot of these things Cub fans now know. Cub fans understand it a little bit better. They're more ingrained with it, especially diehards. We all know that baseball, unlike some of these other sports, the niche of it makes it so much diehard for the diehard fans. So people are going to know these guys. And that's what I want to see. If they do give Chris Bryant a crazy contract, whether I agree with it or not, whether you agree with it or not, whether anybody does, what are Cub fans going to think about it? Are they going to turn on him? Do they agree with him? Where are Cub fans when it comes to their how they feel about Chris Bryant? Do they feel better about having Javier Baez as the face of the franchise for the next few years? Do they think it's Wilson Contreras? You know, I think it was telling when you saw Contreras make those comments before the All-Star break and then Chris Bryant's interview with Joe Buck during the game, just kind of where this team is at and even how David Ross responded to it. There is a disconnect. There is some kind of division in the locker room. Whether it's little, whether it's big, that's not up for me to say. But you can hear it in their comments and what they say to the media. So obviously something needs to change.
So do you think that would make the front office panicky to sell before the deadline then rather than panicky to bring anyone back after the deadline?
I think the Jock Peterson trade is the wild card in all this, right? Like, was he the easiest trade piece? Was he the one that they were just...
Let's talk about who they got for him, because, it's like that should at least be, an indicator of what this is supposed to look like going forward. And they get Bryce Ball, who just turned 23. He's a first baseman, so it makes you think, well, what does that mean for Rizzo if you're talking about a guy that, is about the age of somebody that should be making their debut soon? He's definitely a guy that got affected by the lack of a minor league system last year, and he's struggled this year. But he's expected to debut in 2023. But in the Cubs' top 30 prospects on MLB Pipeline, guess where this guy ends up in that list of the top 30, where he slots in now that he's a Cub?
Now that he's a Cub?
Yeah.
So I will put him at, 12?
29.
Wow. Okay.
6'6", bats left, throws right, on-base guy. He really can work a count. And, kind of like the Yasmani Grandal, low average, high on-base this year.
So I wonder if this is a case where this is an indication of what they're thinking moving forward, or if this is somebody that they think they can retool and put somewhere else if they know that they're going to go DH at some point.
Here's another one. Okay, so Rizzo, of course, we talk about where does he belong. Today the Cubs claimed Frank Schwindel from the A's off of waivers. And the guy, a cup of coffee here and there, I think, with a couple of different teams. I think Kansas City and Oakland, only a couple dozen games. But still, that kind of makes you kind of scratch your head a little bit and wonder, well, are they really looking at having a guy, it's like Schwindel come up in case Rizzo gets dealt in the next couple weeks.
And I guess here's the question, right? What team needs an Anthony Rizzo? What team wants an Anthony Rizzo? Where can Anthony Rizzo go that an organization is going to be able to utilize him? Because here's the thing, right? He's a first baseman with bad back problems, right? And we've seen, I think Rizzo, again, one of the pillars of this organization, but he's somebody who I think you've seen the better days of. Now, he could still be a nice player, a good player for the Cubs or someone else, but I wonder what's the value of Anthony Rizzo if you're talking about a rebuild that's going to be hurried, that you're going to get top-tier prospects. I think that's the issue maybe that none of us want to be honest about, or that we've just kind of tiptoed around, is it's a little too late now that you're getting rid of these guys to expect any type of value, and especially with them not being healthy, not having the greatest of seasons, not having great moments. Like that to me is also a miscalculation from both front office and from ownership, is that 2021 was not the time to sell on this team. If you were thinking about a true rebuild where you were going to get value, I think, and I don't know how you guys feel about that. I never want to see a team throw up the white flag, right? Like, I don't want to see anybody give up. I think you should be both investing and retooling, scouting, developing, having superstars. But they made their choices. So I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but if you were going to be doing this moves, and we're talking about Anthony Rizzo being moved, what's the value of that? You're talking about getting a first baseman who, if that's all he's going to be, if he's going to develop, it seems like it's just going to be a hitting first baseman. You're not even getting a guy who's probably going to be on the field for you. It's weird to me. It's just, I don't know. How do you guys feel about that? That I'd be trying to wrap my head around that one, that maybe we're just a little too late if you're the Cubs front office for this.
All right. Closing thoughts here. Paul, I think we should shut up and let the two Cubs fans.
Yeah.
Marver, by July 30th, what do you think the Cubs are going to do, and who's still going to be there?
I was going to make one point. I mean, the last two World Series champions, when you have the Dodgers, you'd have the Nationals and the cheating Astros, and then even going back to the Yankees, I mean, the Yankees, you know, looked like they might be a team a few years ago that were going to be consistent winners. So it's not easy to handle this in the era of free agency, but I believe that they will, do based on their current position in the standings, make multiple moves with one, two, or all three of the players we keep mentioning in this conversation. And it's just the way it is. Baseball is a business. And the Cubs fans will have to go back to the days where there are 30,000 people, lovable losers for a while. It happened. It happened in 2011, 2012, whenever. And so that's the way it will be. And perhaps they'll get lucky again. It's not always skill that gets you to win. You know, it wasn't that they were, that Bryant was going to be good and that Baez was, you never know. So, you know, and they trade away some great players to the White Sox too, so it's not a magical formula at all, but they will be making moves, no question.
All right, Mercado, where do you think the Cubs will be July 30th?
They'll be making moves. They'll probably be in the same exact spot they've been this whole run. I think they will re-sign Javier Baez. I do think Chris Bryant will end up probably in Queens, will end up in a Mets jersey, and yeah, we'll see. We'll see if it's a quick turnaround or if this is something that they miscalculated, and it'll be a long time before this team is going to NLCSs and in playing four division titles.
It's going to be a very interesting season out there for the Cubs. But on the south side, me and Paul will be partying hard. You guys can join us if you want to. But right now, I don't love this, but right now there's another final we need to go on to sports. That's the NBA Finals, and as I've been making it clear here, I like the Suns, but it seems every team I like in the NBA Final has just been, in the NBA Championship Finals, I mean, has just been losing. Yeah. So maybe I should be going saying the Suns, but I brought an expert on here. We got a good friend of Rob's Two Sports, Rob's Two Cents, I mean, on the Rewind Sports 60 Roku. Rob, how you doing today?
I'm all good. Devin, how you feeling, brother?
A little tongue-tied. Other than that, we're doing great here. So last night,
hey,
the Suns. Glad to have you. So last night, the Suns were starting to look like the team they were at the beginning. You know, that 2-0 lead here. I'm like, all right, game three, here we go. Okay, they lost game three. Game four, here we go. And then game five, like, here we go. And again, we go here. So I'm curious, do you think we're going to make it to seven games?
I think so. If we look at game four and game five, there's really no one to blame. Milwaukee just simply out-hustled the Phoenix Suns. If you look at game four, the defensive play made by Giannis, the Greek freak, to stop DeAndre Ayton on the alley-oop attempt at the same time while guarding Devin Booker at the top of the key, and to be able to stop on a dime on Devin Booker to anticipate the alley-oop pass, and then to block DeAndre Ayton at the top of his apex on the alley-oop. That was just beautiful to see. And then you look last night at game five, Jrue Holiday, another defensive presence on the court, making life tough for Chris Paul, for CP3, for the point guard. He double teamed. He sees that Devin Booker is about to go into his move, and Devin Booker spins right into Jrue Holiday, and then Jrue Holiday grabs the ball and then throws another alley-oop to Giannis Antetokounmpo. And it's just beautiful defense being played by the Milwaukee Bucks right now. But I do believe Phoenix is going to have that urgency, have that get it in them, and they're going to be able to pull out game six. But right now, Milwaukee looks like they're outclassing the Phoenix Suns. I'm telling you, Devin. And what's going on, Marvelous? How you doing?
Hey, how you doing? How about that? Have you ever seen a team score 43 points in a quarter in the playoffs? It happened.
Wow.
And then 36 in the third. I mean, they scored 79 points essentially in a half on yesterday. Unbelievable.
You know what? It's just it's a great feeling to see Milwaukee to finally stop playing dumb basketball. Like you clearly see, you have an offensive juggernaut in Giannis Antetokounmpo in the paint area. Stop shooting the threes. Beat this team up in the paint. I mentioned that on the last time I was here on the Rewind Sports 60. If the Milwaukee Bucks wants to win this game, they're going to have to stop shooting threes. You're going to have to beat up the smaller team. The injury to Dario Saric, that was a huge injury for Phoenix. Now you only have DeAndre Ayton. He's the biggest guy on the court, and he's trying to stop Giannis. And Giannis hasn't had a great game against DeAndre, but against everybody else, Giannis is still supreme. He's finally stopped taking those three-pointers, only shot about 4 3-point shots in the last two games. He's realizing, my bread and butter is in the paint. Beat this smaller team up. Get DeAndre Ayton in foul trouble, and we're going to beat everybody else up. I'm telling you, man.
Rob, let me ask you something. Good to talk to you, by the way, my brother. Let me ask you this. The Bucks definitely overpaid to make sure that Jrue Holiday and what Jrue Holiday brings was going to be on this roster. The impact of Jrue Holiday, how can you explain? We talked about it the last time we were on here that his play trying to match a Chris Paul. Like, think about what that matchup problem is. At this point, Chris Paul chasing his biggest moment, his lasting statement in the NBA. The impact of Jrue Holiday putting right next to Giannis. How big was it? Little did we know how big it would be this deep into the NBA Finals.
Hey, I'm glad you asked that question, and great to talk to you as well, my brother. Let me tell you something. I've been screaming since the incarnation of Rob Susan. Which you can check me out on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, by the way, and also on the Rewind Sports 60 Roku channel. Jrue Holiday is the most underrated player, underrated two-way player in the league. He gives it to you on both ends. So Milwaukee understood we're going to have to pay to get some talent on this team. And they bring in the Jrue Holiday, and yes, he's been up and down offensively, but the job he's done on Chris Paul, taking Chris Paul out of his game. We saw in game four, Chris Paul has 5 turnovers. Now he bounces back in game 5, only have 1 turnover, but just making life tough, just the key defensive stop in game 5 at the end of the game, snatching the ball away from Devin Booker, and then giving it to you on the offensive side to give Giannis the assist, giving him 13 assists on the night along with 27 points. Jrue Holiday has been truly a sight to see in this NBA Finals. Yes, we know some games he'll go 4 for 20, but Jrue Holiday is going to play defense. He doesn't just rely on his offensive skills. He is NBA all-first team defense this year, baby.
So if you're looking at what the Bucks need to do to finish off this series, is it to contain Devin Booker, or is it to continue to frustrate Chris Paul? Because look, all of a sudden, I love Chris Paul. All of a sudden, he's looking a little old. He's looking a little beat up. So where are they at now? Do you go all in and try to stop a Devin Booker? You allow DeAndre Ayton to do his thing. Do you allow Giannis to just kind of go become his free man? Where are you right now thinking of how Milwaukee can finish this off? Because I don't think Milwaukee wants this to go seven. I think Milwaukee wants to end this series now. We're talking about all this, and we literally thought that they were going to amputate Giannis's knee. This is how crazy this man is. So where are you at thinking matchup-wise how this series needs to end for Milwaukee?
I'm going to tell you like this. Milwaukee does not want a game seven. You do not want to give Phoenix any confidence. What you want to do is you want to contain Chris Paul. Devin Booker has had back-to-back 40-point games, and they lost both games. What you want to do is contain Chris Paul, because what's happening right now is Giannis is playing out of his mind right now, and Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday are following suit. Giannis has help. And when you look at Devin Booker, he's had back-to-back 40-point games, and really nobody is stepping up to go along for the ride. And that's because of the defense that's being played on Chris Holiday. You're not going to stop a great offensive threat like Devin Booker. He can give it to you from the mid-range. He can get hot occasionally from the three-point line. But as far as mid-range, he's about as deadliest of a player that we've seen since KD and Chris Middleton on the mid-range shot. He can shoot the ball from the mid-range. But if you stop Chris Paul, if you get him to become a turnover machine, as he's been for at least three games out of the series, you're going to win. And the Milwaukee Bucks know that. And they're going to keep playing Jrue Holiday on Chris Paul because he's going to play him 94 feet of the floor. He's not going to let Chris Paul get comfortable. And we've seen Chris Paul just make costly turnovers after the defense played by Jrue Holiday. So I believe right now I want to see this go to game seven, but if Chris Paul doesn't find an answer, in which I believe Phoenix should let Devin Booker run more of the facilitator, because right now Jrue Holiday is picking up Chris Paul the moment he touches the ball.
You know, I think Milwaukee will end this on Tuesday. I'll tell you why. I think that the Greek Freak can own the paint, but you talk about three-pointers. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Pat Connaughton and our friend Bobby Portis from three-point land.
Wow.
And even Lopez. I mean, as a threat, you know, look at the old days with the Bulls with Kerr or Paxson. Yeah. If you have the three-point threat, you have to guard that too, and that will make the Greek Freak even more impressive in the paint.
Yes. Yes, and not to mention, as I mentioned again, the Phoenix Suns are not going to get any bigger by Tuesday. Milwaukee understands it's bread and butter. It's to beat this little team up in the paint. We're going to get our open threes. I'm glad you said that, Marvelous. Got to give a shout-out to the others. Bobby Portis and Pat Connaughton has had a great series. I mean, Pat Connaughton making those offensive rebounds, you know, getting those important boards, making those important threes. Bobby Portis just simply out hustling everybody. Shout out to Bobby Portis, former Chicago Bull. Glad to see him doing this thing in the NBA Finals. Right now, Milwaukee is looking good.
let me ask you, boys, something as we kind of finish this up. And the NBA Finals end, right? It's over. One of these two teams win a championship. Let's go around the room. Which of these franchises gets back the soonest? Because I think this is the last time we're going to see both these teams not only face each other, but the last time these two teams might make the finals. So with that, which one makes a final next?
I'd say the Bucks, just because Giannis is probably going to be there for a while. It seems like there's some sort of loyalty, and it seems like they play well at the Fiserv Forum, and now you've just, you know, inspired a fan base to come out and watch you a lot. But I think in the long term, though, Phoenix is just a better market where, you know, if Milwaukee can't get back there sooner than later, Phoenix is the favorite for the long term.
Yeah. Anybody else want to answer that before I jump in?
Marver? You know who had the best records in each league? The 76ers and the Jazz. That just tells you something. It could be just about anybody. Then the Lakers will always be a threat, of course. So I don't see both these teams coming back. And, of course, you got the Nets. So there's a lot of competition out there. And it won't be the Bulls, but but the ones I just mentioned are very likely to be there instead of these two, I think.
Yeah.
I'll throw it to my boy Rob really fast. I'm going to go with Milwaukee.
Hey,
I'll side with Mercado there.
Hey, appreciate that, Mercado. Hey, I'm going to tell you like this. I agree with Marvelous. I don't see neither one of these teams being able to make it back. We don't know if Chris Paul is going to be back with the Phoenix Suns at the end of the year. You know, he's getting older. And, you know, if they're able to win a ring, even if they don't win a ring, he might retire. You know, it might just be enough for this guy. And then you look at the Los Angeles Lakers, you see potential tradings with Lonzo Ball or possibly Damian Lillard forcing his way out of Portland. The Lakers right now is a top market. People still want to play with LeBron, regardless of how AEC looked this past season. The mystique and allure of playing with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, it still looms over people's heads. And they know what the Brooklyn Nets can bring. You know, you're going to see a healthy KD, a healthy James Harden, a healthy Kyrie. So let me just tell you guys, man, I don't see neither one of these teams being back in the finals, at least for probably another 10 to 20 years.
All good points, Rob. Again, this is the fastest hour in sports talk radio. We got to wrap it up here, guys. So yeah. Rob of Rob's Two Cents, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, appreciate you, Devin. Appreciate you, Marvelous. Yeah, man. Hey, hey, everybody. Hey, Mercado, appreciate you as well, sir. And everybody, man, make sure you guys check us out on the Rewind Sports 60 Roku channel, man. Mm-hmm. We doing big things, baby. Rob's Two Cents, the Rewind Sports 60. Everything is going great, baby. Holler at you guys later, y'all.
Hey. Took the words right out of my mouth there, Rob. So, Mike Mercado, thank you so much. The Marvelous One, Dan Marver, and Paul Shavari. I don't have a nickname for you yet, but thank you for joining me. Jerry Riles will be around next week, guys. Stick around for Cliff Kelly. This is the Rewind. This was the Rewind Sports 60.